Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Asia Business First podcast. I'm Julie Yu. My co-host, Adam Bhaktia, is away again. So filling in for him, as always, is our deputy chief editor of digital news, David Bottleney. David, good to have you back. And you don't rest, do you?
I've said it many times already that I feel I'm on this podcast sometimes more than you and Adam, but that's fine by me. What's Adam up to? We know that in previous weeks, when he's not been around, he's gone for his male makeovers. Right. I know he needs another one, but is that what he's doing this week?
No, not today, but I hear that he's away as a moderator and chairing a discussion at the Mint Asia Leadership Summit this afternoon.
Well, that sounds very glamorous and exciting, and perhaps he'll be up against a tough crowd with people asking all sorts of questions, but perhaps not as tough as what Facebook chief executive Mark Zuckerberg had to face this week.
That's right. It must have felt like the longest 10 hours of his life, and literally. Zuckerberg was grilled in two separate hearings in Washington, facing some very tough questions from almost 100 politicians about privacy issues and how his company fed its users' data to advertisers. And the reason the Facebook chief was summoned in the first place is the recent revelation that some 87 million Facebook users had their data harvested and improperly shared with political consulting firm Cambridge Analytica. And this is way more than the 50 million that the company had initially estimated. So how did it get its hands on them in the first place? But it all started in 2014 with this seemingly innocent Facebook app named This Is Your Digital Life. And this app offered some personality quizzes and was created by this Russian-American researcher called Dr. Alexander Kogan, who worked at the University of Cambridge.
And what was interesting about this particular case is that only around 270,000 people installed the app. But somewhat loose restrictions in Facebook's system at the time allowed developers to collect information about those users' friends as well as the users themselves. And from this snowball effect, Dr. Kogan was able to gain access to the data of millions of Facebook users, crucially, without their consent. That data was shared with Cambridge Analytica, which is said to have used it to create targeted digital ads during the 2016 US presidential election.
Yeah, and I hear that starting April 9th, Facebook has been alerting the users if their data was compromised with this notification at the top of the newsfeed. And thank God I haven't received it, and I'm sure you haven't too, David, because you don't seem like a guy who would take these personality quizzes, or do you, secretly do it behind people's back and find it?
I'm a very light Facebook user, to be honest.
But I'm curious about your thoughts on this Facebook data fiasco, because in their very first ABF podcast, I remember that you saying you didn't mind if companies collected data about you. Here's what you said.
I don't care. If people can point products in my direction, which I might have a genuine interest in, then I really don't mind. And if people want to mine my profiles for data and information, I say bring it on.
So, David, do you still stand by what you said?
You know what? I do. For the most part, I do. The fact that perhaps other organizations and other entities are perhaps taking the data which has been mined by Facebook without my explicit consent, that may be a cause for concern. But I think, as far as I'm concerned, we all need to have our eyes open about what Facebook is all about. Mm-hmm. Mark Zuckerberg isn't some kind of avuncular nice guy who's here to help us all connect with each other and share pictures and profiles and information about our holidays. He is a businessman who is leading a huge business, and that business is there to make money. Mm-hmm. And how does it make money? It takes our data and it targets advertising at us. And although there are issues about whether Facebook does enough to really explain to people how it operates and what it is doing with this information and whether people are signing up to it in a positive way, that's something to be discussed. But fundamentally, I signed up to Facebook knowing what its business model was, and I don't mind.
All right. Okay. You cleared that up. So let's should we bring on our guests and discuss this further?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, there will be people out there who are very concerned about how tech companies go about obtaining information about us and exactly what they do with that data. So let's bring in the experts. We've got Alex Capri, Senior Fellow and Lecturer at the NUS Business School, and Sheena Chin, Country Director of the Singapore arm of Veritas, which is an international data management company with its headquarters in the US. Welcome to you both.
Welcome.
Pleasure to be here.
So let's start off. What's your report card on Mark Zuckerberg's performance this week? Did he do enough to reassure people feel that enough was being done to protect their data?
I think he struck the right tone. I think he went to Washington to convince lawmakers and the public that Facebook is going to try and work with the public and work with lawmakers. I think what comes out of this meeting is how far this whole digital phenomenon has progressed, the scale of it, mm-hmm. and how little lawmakers and the public in general actually understand about the pervasiveness mm-hmm. of data in our lives. And I think this is just the very beginning. I think there will be many more rounds of regulation that will come out of this. I think there will be advocacy groups that will be pushing lawmakers, because clearly lawmakers don't understand what's happening. I'm not sure Facebook understands mm-hmm. exactly what's been happening. So I think this is just the beginning of a very, very long saga that's going to unfold.
Okay. Sheena, your thoughts?
I think spending 2 days in Washington definitely is something that Mark has to do. It is at least for him to demonstrate his due diligence, his accountability, and to give an answer to the community, mm-hmm. to the society. To me, it is really about learning a good lesson, given that Facebook is a very renowned brand. It is probably the largest social media platform today. So, as in whether it is really getting into something, it to me is all about a very good wake-up call mm-hmm. for regulators, for businesses, or even down to the consumers to think about how they need to be getting serious about managing their own data.
Since the whole saga unfolded a couple of months ago, there has been a bit of a groundswell of support for the idea of people should delete Facebook. But I wonder whether we really are at a tipping point in the way people engage with Facebook, and whether there is any sense that people are turning away from the platform. Because one of the key things about it is that it is ubiquitous. It does, to some extent, have a monopoly on this type of platform. And if people do want to connect with each other in social media, Facebook is the go-to platform.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there's a groundswell. And I think there are some people that will absolutely walk away from Facebook, because it's, again, it's the scale is just so vast, and it's become such a core part of any kind of digital presence. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's going to suffer immeasurably, you know, in terms of, you know, people deserting. But I do see a definite cultural shift and a backlash in general against ubiquitous technology. For many reasons, not just for privacy, but you know what effects is, you know, constant exposure to our mobile devices doing to our brains, for example. What's it doing to our social fabric? So I think there are many reasons why tech is going to experience a backlash, not just Facebook.
And Sheena, I mean, like you said, Facebook gotten too big to be handled. And some people say it's almost a country unto itself, right? Mm-hmm. So are we at a critical juncture where power, you know, sophistication, technology sort of outpaces what users, regulators, or even, you know, creators, mm-hmm. You know, expected to handle?
In today's context, the need to make use of the social platform to share information, or to the extent for companies to harvest or to make use of information that have been shared freely, is inevitable. It mm-hmm. could be Facebook, it could be any other social media companies who is offering that sort of a free platform. But users, or rather individuals, as well as companies, both have to really take special precaution. Mm-hmm. And they need to understand it's not just about getting the attention, getting the publicity, but the consequence can be down to things like privacy, or even having data to land into the wrong hands. You know, cybersecurity is really something that all regulators are really putting attention to. But as individual data owners, as business owners who have access to this data and who are supposed to be using this data only for the legit, original, intended purpose, if they are not conforming to that, then, you know, things may get out of hand. Yeah.
So let's try to understand this better. So we first talked about how Facebook app was used to obtain data about its users and their friends, right? So mm-hmm. what are some other ways, other tactics that companies can use to, you know, scrape our data?
Mm-hmm. sharing data via social media platform like Facebook is easiest and the most common way, and there is probably no condition for all the consumers to be freely sharing and uploading pictures and information on the platform. But the businesses, as smart as they can be, there are many other means to really collect data. Things like lucky draw, registration for warranty, or getting into certain clubs and all. And sometimes, you know, you'd be surprised how consumer behave. They don't think as thorough as they can. Mm. There could be an incentive at the back that kind of like lure them to share freely. This particular chapter would be a good lesson learned for everyone to really think twice about sharing. Is it really worth it, or to what extent? You know, as individuals, I think we have the right to question, is such an information, is it necessary to be collected?
Mark Zuckerberg, during the hearings, he said that we do have some control over the information which is collected by companies like Facebook and other companies, because we can choose what we put up onto our social media platforms. We don't have to do anything we don't want to. We don't have to share anything we don't want to. Was his defense of that legitimate and well thought out? I mean, do you agree with Mr. Zuckerberg on that point?
I would agree, I have to say, because it's always a two-pronged approach to make sure we protect ourselves. First, on the contributor of the data, which is the individual, the consumer. Nobody is pointing a knife at you to share. You have the right to decide whether you want to share the information in exchange for anything or nothing at all, right? And as for the business, you know, for them to be taking ownership of the data, they have to put in the proper measure, as in how is it being stored, proper security policies to make sure the data is, you know, residing in a sound place and not to be mishandled, and it has to be solely serving the original purpose that they have stated. So in a way, Mark is right. The onus is on both the data owner, as in both the business and the individual who contributed or who shared the data.
Yeah, let me just add to what Sheena was saying. I think what's going to come out of this is a better understanding of the fundamental business model of social media platforms. Mm-hmm. And I think users now are going to start to realize that they are the product. Mm-hmm. We are the product. If I have a Facebook page, my data is the product. That's why it's a free platform, mm-hmm. right? And the other thing is that, you know, when we think about Facebook, what we really have to think about is a much broader data ecosystem that's out there. It's a collection of different stakeholders that are using private data, our data, to create revenue. So, you know, you've got the online advertisers, of course, right? You've got the data brokers. There's a whole niche of intermediaries that do nothing but process data, that mine data. From not just Facebook, but from a whole host of different platforms, and consolidate that data, and then they analyze it. So the other element are the data analytical firms that do this. So you take all of those stakeholders together, and you have this massive data-driven ecosystem, right? So consumers need to understand that that's the business model. Now, where are we going to go with this? And I think this is the existential threat to Facebook. If we reach a point where the fundamental business model, that one that I just described, is challenged, then you're looking at a completely different world for Facebook. Then you're looking at a big, big problem for Facebook and that model, right? So if we start seeing the subscription-based model taking over, where people just pay and they can pay maybe, you know, a premium type amount of money to have more privacy, to know how their data is being used, or even to get compensated when their data is shared, that may very well be where we're going.
You said that consumers need to understand the business model, Alex. The fact that perhaps many of us don't fully understand the business model, where does the fault lie in that? Is it Facebook's fault? Is it our fault? Or is it perhaps government's fault for not introducing some kind of regulatory environment where they make companies like Facebook be much more explicit about the way they operate?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think the fault lies with all three. Have you read a terms and conditions and the agreement to any of your online?
Of course not. We all scroll down and tick, I have read and agree to whatever you have said in the last 10,000 words.
Absolutely. And nobody reads them. And you know, you'd need to be a lawyer and you'd need to spend a day and a half just to go through it. So nobody reads it. So that's got to be fixed. And that onus falls on lawmakers, on regulators. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, let the buyer beware as well. I mean, buyers have a responsibility. If you're going to consume a certain product, you're going to take on a certain amount of risk. And you need to have a basic understanding of that. I think the problem here is that technology has moved so fast and it has expanded so exponentially in terms of what it does. I mean, I'm a technophile, right? I'm a great believer in the benefits of all of this technology. It certainly delivers huge benefits, but it's a Faustian bargain. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely a Faustian bargain. And if we're going to gain access to infinite knowledge and wisdom, we have to figure out who we're selling our soul to. And that hasn't happened.
I think it's interesting that in all this, Mr. Zuckerberg has been painted as the bad guy. But I wonder if that really is the case, that he's been operating within a business environment which allows him to do whatever he wants to do. There aren't the regulations which are putting checks and balances in place. Surely the bad guys are the governments who have not done enough and have not acted quickly enough to put in place some kind of regulatory environment to keep a check and balance on such companies as Facebook.
Certainly agree to that. And, you know, maybe just to add on to what Alex mentioned earlier, it is a world whereby data is really driving business. The data-driven ecosystem is formed, right? And we often term data as the currency of today's world. Mm-hmm. But data is also the new oil. So imagine if you have oil leakage in the sea, to clean it up is going to be super costly. So there are actually technologies, some from Veritas, that helps to really enable businesses to be accessing the data from multiple sources. It could be Facebook, it could be any other social media or any other sources where data could be obtainable. So that helps business to get the visibility to use the intelligence to make decisions. That's the plus side of having huge amount of data. However, the downside is how do you make sure these data are in the right place? Every company would have some sort of a policies to make sure these data are managed well. So you want that access, at the same time control, to make sure you know you do not have data that really go down to the wrong places and ultimately the wrong hands.
All right, let's talk about regulations. I mean, I think the scandal can't be more timely in a sense that the regulation is about to become reality for Facebook and Europe, right? Where this old GDPR, which stands for General Data Protection Regulation, starts in May 25th. Mm-hmm. I mean, Sheena, you wrote about this new regulation in an article, I believe, a few months back. Can you just sort of, for those of us who are not familiar with what GDPR is, what it is, and how it's going to impact businesses and consumers.
Right. So this is protecting the EU residents. Any information that is collected from the EU residents is supposed to be used only for the intended stated purpose. And it applies to businesses not just in Europe, but also for businesses that operate outside Europe. As long as they are collecting data from the EU residents, they will be subject to this law. Mm. And the penalty for breaching could be as high as 4% of their annual turnover. So it's huge.
Quite hefty.
Mm. It's huge. And I have to say, even outside the European community, there are many other countries, including Singapore, we are also introducing tough terms to protect data, right? Locally, we have PDPC introducing the PDPA. Just that GDPR has a lot more noise because of the huge penalty. Mm. Yeah.
So for a country like Singapore, for example, which is trying to be, you know, a smart nation, I guess it's important to strike the balance of you know, leveraging big data to transforming the economy and the data privacy. Mm-hmm. How do you do that? How do you balance that?
It's always a struggle. And even if you have the greatest technology to help you, you know, get the inside access to all sort of data that you can get your hands to, you need to have technology to also control, to make sure all the right policies are being enforced. So you can have that today, but you know, as businesses, as enterprises, one shouldn't be complacent because technology gets obsolete real quick. And, you know, the people with the malicious mind will always come up with new means to break and to get into some kind of a compromise to access to the data. Mm-hmm. So which is why there's never a complete foolproof approach to really balance it. But I'm sure in today's context, and of course, if they work with Veritas, we do have some measures to help them.
I was just going to add, I think there's a silver lining here. It's and it's a huge opportunity for the market to come up with certain solutions. So think about, you know, we talked about data as a currency, right? But privacy will become a currency as well.
Wow.
Oh, yes.
So think about the commoditization of privacy or even the commoditization of truth, right? I mean, I have my master's students working on business models around this.
Wow.
So, you know, how do you come up with some kind of a value-adding service that guarantees your privacy, that cloaks your presence on the while you're surfing on the web, that identifies when, you know, data is being extracted from, you know, your data packets or when your IP address is being accessed or cookies are being attached to your browsing, et cetera, et cetera. So I think people will be willing to pay a lot of money to ensure their privacy. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge market opportunity. And there are firms working on this right now.
How extraordinary that we're talking about the concept of paying huge sums of money to protect your privacy, that it's almost something you actively have to do, that if you don't do it, then your privacy is going to be compromised. I mean, what sort of world are we in? Are we really in Big Brother territory now?
We are. We're in a brave new world now. And, you know, I think if you take this even further, the types of rules and frameworks that apply and the political systems that you're operating under are going to have a big say in this privacy. So in the West, of course, you've got special interests and you've got you know, advocacy groups that are going to be pushing for privacy, and they're going to be effective. But I mean, the other side of this is a pure digital dystopia, where, you know, you don't have a bottom up kind of opportunity for stakeholders to press their concerns.
Yeah.
So I mean, this really is uncharted territory, no question.
Interesting.
Alex, at the start of this conversation, you touched on the ubiquitousness of certain platforms. And it's not just Facebook. There are other companies out there which are dominant in their particular fields. Google, of course, is the go-to platform for many purposes. Amazon, in some markets, has done particularly well. And there have been calls for attempts to be made to break up some of this monopolistic business practices which are in place. But how realistic is that? I mean, can anything really be done to break up the monopolistic position which such companies occupy?
It's interesting. I think there are three key areas that these really big tech giants impact. Interestingly enough, one of them is taxation. So if you look at a company like Facebook or Google, and you look at the problems that they've been having, particularly in the EU, with underpayment of taxes, one of the incentives to break up these big companies is if you break them up, they don't have the clout and they don't have the power to essentially circumvent a lot of these tax regulations, and therefore they would contribute to the tax base much more so. So there's one incentive to break them up. The other, of course, is, you know, once a company gets that big, are they essentially just hoovering up all the potential competition? Are they buying up all the startups, which we know they do? Yeah. Many of the startups that are bought by Google, they're bought not to incorporate their IP or their services into the broader core competency of the company. They're bought just to get them out of the way, basically. And that squelches, that stifles innovation. And so there are those who would say that capitalism's in trouble. You know, when you have companies this big, when you have Google that, you know, controls 80%+ of all the web searches, basically the queries in the Western world, that's not a healthy situation. The question is, how do you break them up? And, you know, that's a real challenge. That really is.
And I wonder whether, though, people really want them to be broken up.
Yeah.
Because companies like Amazon, they do what they do incredibly well. And they may have a negative impact on other businesses. But fundamentally, myself as a consumer, I love buying on Amazon. They're fast and they're cheap and they're effective.
Mm, right.
I don't really mind that much if they continue to do what they do really well. And it's not really for me to worry about how they impact other businesses. So is there consumer demand for the breakup of Facebook and Amazon and Google? Yeah.
I think you could argue there really isn't, because at the end of the day, you want to buy the best product for the cheapest price. And if Amazon or Alibaba or anybody else delivers that, hey, great, mission accomplished, right? So yeah, I mean, in the classical traditional sense, they aren't behaving like Standard Oil, for example.
Okay, so I want to get some sense as to what we could be doing if we are worried about what is being done with the data which is being collected. Mm-hmm. What can we do to protect ourselves aside from paying vast sums of money to pay somebody to do it for us? What can we do?
As a consumer, I think we just have to be smarter about sharing. Share only the necessary. If you are an enthusiast in sharing and maybe, you know, set a timeline. You don't have to share it forever. You know, just share it and perhaps you may want to make sure your circle of friends get to know what you intend to share, and up to a certain time, remove them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, practice some good data management hygiene. Declutter. I do have people who have like messages or pictures that have been over a decade and still up in some free sites somewhere. Yeah. And personally, as a Facebook user, as well as a WhatsApp user, I actually welcome the approach of them consolidating into a larger organization. Mm. So from this chapter, yes, there will be individuals or consumers sharing their view of dismay and discontent. But on the whole, I do feel for the general consumer, most people will still be living and using the social platform as in just like business as usual.
One last question for everybody around the table. We spoke about how people just click on terms and conditions without reading them. I wonder if anyone around this table has actually gone back to look at Facebook's terms and conditions since this whole thing erupted to see exactly what Facebook says it is doing with our data and how it does operate. Or are we still operating blindly without actually being proactive and trying to work out what Facebook is doing with us? Julie, what about you?
No, I've been very busy.
Alex?
You may be shocked to learn that I do not have a Facebook. And I never have had a Facebook account, even though I am very active in the digital economy. I use other platforms. But my reasons for not getting a Facebook account, and I'll be totally blunt about this, was, you know, I just thought it was just, you know, petty, narcissistic, vapid waste of time to be posting all of that stuff online. And I just had far better things to do
with my time. You've just antagonized 2 billion people around the world.
I'm very sorry. Now, I realize that there are strong arguments to use Facebook for, and you know, I write in a lot of publications and they end up trending on Facebook. So thank you very much, Facebook. But the network effect serves me very well. Thank you. But no, I've just never had a Facebook account.
Fair enough. Sheena, what about you? Have you gone back to check?
I share Alex's sentiments. I do have a Facebook account, definitely, but I have very, very minimal information in my account. The account is set up for me to allow my friends, my contacts, to share information with me. Mm. So I'm the receiver of information.
Okay.
And fun fact, I'm not a big Facebook fan either. The only reason I have an account is because I need it for work. It's a way that journalists operate. Yeah. So I have no choice in the matter. But anyway, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks very much to our guests for joining us this week. They were Alex Capri, Senior Fellow and Lecturer at the NUS Business School, and Sheena Chin, Country Director of Veritas in Singapore.
Thank you very much, both of you. And if you have any pressing questions or topics you'd like us to cover on this podcast, you can reach me on where else? Facebook or on Twitter at JulieUCNA. And you can catch Adam Bhaktia and myself every day from 9 a.m. Singapore, Hong Kong time on Asia Business First and Channel News Asia. Full episodes are available on channelnewsasia.com under the video on demand section.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.